well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. And glad to have our guest, Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center, joining us for a lengthy and beefy discussion. I hope that you are a data, I don't want to say nerd, because that does seem to have sort of a negative connotation. Geek, is that any better? I don't know. I hope you're a fan of data, because we're going to delve into crime stats. Trying to answer the question, is crime going up or down in this country? You know, if you look at most of the major cities' reports, certainly homicides appear to be declining substantially, even from last year, which also saw a pretty substantial decline in reported homicides. But then it gets a little murkier, right? Because there's a lot of variables at play, as Dr. John Lott discusses. You have reported crimes, you have property crime versus violent crimes, you have when crimes are actually tallied in terms of statistics. Does it happen when a report is filed? Does it happen when an arrest is made? Does it happen when a prosecutor charges somebody? What happens if a prosecutor downgrades a charge from a felony or offense, one of those crimes that are reported to the FBI, to a misdemeanor offense, crimes that are not reported to the FBI? There are lots of games that can be played with crime stats. City of Chicago, several years ago, sort of infamously touted its high rate of solving homicides by including cases from previous years. So I'm just going to give you a hypothetical. I don't know what the actual numbers were, but, you know, 600 homicides in Chicago. And they said, well, we cleared, 400 of these. But let's say 200 of those were cleared from prior years, right? It may not have even resulted in an arrest. They may have decided, you know what, this person who was killed in a gang shooting 2 months after this homicide, we think he was responsible for that homicide. Again, there are all kinds of ways to massage these numbers, right? What's the line from Mark Twain? Lies, damn lies, and statistics. But this is a question that is a political issue as well, right? Democrats are desperate to try to give Joe Biden any boost that they can. So they want to give him credit for declining crime rates, even though I don't think that's the case. Republicans, meanwhile, have a vested interest in saying, no, you're not better off than you were 4 years ago. Crime is not substantially fallen. And, you know, they can point to things like the Gallup survey that shows a majority of Americans believe that crime is getting worse, not necessarily in their own communities, but nationwide. So I will tell you from the outset, I don't think that John and I settled the debate. John's position is that crime, he believes, is still continuing to increase in this country. I'm not sure. Honestly, that's where I come down. I don't know. It seems to me like there's pretty good evidence that murders are decreasing. Once you get past that category of crime, again, I think it's pretty easy to start playing games with the stats. And so I don't know if crime is going up or down. Maybe I should have saved that for the after interview. But it was a fascinating conversation. And if you care about crime stats, if you care about public safety, I think you'll enjoy the discussion. Take a look and a listen. John, thanks so much for coming to the program. It's good to see you again, sir.
Oh, it's great to talk to you again, Cam. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting to me because this, you know, it seems like everything is a debate these days, including now whether crime is going up or down in this country. So you've had a number of pieces, including the Wall Street Journal, arguing that crime is not actually decreasing in this country right now, that it is, in fact, going up, right?
That's correct. I mean, I just don't think most people understand the crime data. Surely the media doesn't understand it. There are two measures that we have of crime. There's the FBI Uniform Crime Reports. Those are counting the number of crimes reported to police. And then you have something called the National Crime Victimization Survey data, which surveys 240,000 people a year, and they've been doing that for about 50 years. The reason why we have the National Crime Victimization data is that we know most crimes aren't reported to police. Only about 42% of violent crimes are reported to police, and only about 32% of property crimes are reported to police. And we also know that that can vary somewhat over time. And so in the past, prior to COVID, the FBI data and the National Crime Victimization data generally tended to move together. But since then, they've been going in actually opposite directions. You know, I'll give you an example. In 2022, while the FBI reported crime data showed a 2% drop in violent crime, the National Crime Victimization data showed a 42% increase in violent crime. And so, you know, you have two things that are going on. One is talking about crimes reported to police, and the other is trying to get a measure of total crime, reported and unreported. And what's happened is that law enforcement in this country has collapsed. I don't think, I mean, people talk about it to some extent, but I don't think people completely understand how totally law enforcement has collapsed in this country. You take, I mean, this is true across all cities, but if you take cities with more than a million people in them, in the 5 years before COVID, you had an average arrest rate for violent crimes of 44%. It started falling in 2020. And by 2022, it was down to 20%. It's a drop from 44% of violent crimes resulting in arrest to 20%. And if you put it differently, if you put it in terms of arrests as a percentage of all crime, reported and unreported, it's a disaster. I mean, only 8% of violent crimes in those cities result in arrests, and only 1% of property crimes in those cities result in arrest. And people need to understand that arrest doesn't mean that they're charged. And just because you're charged doesn't mean that you're prosecuted or convicted. And so for many crimes in these urban areas, it's very low risk that the criminals face, that they're going to face any punishment for the crimes that they've committed. So the bottom line is, and there are multiple things we go through, but the main thing that I want to get across is that as arrest rates have fallen dramatically, people are less inclined to go and report crimes to the police. And so what's happened is that you've seen a drop in reported crimes, even though you've seen an increase in total crimes. But look, there's also a problem with the reported crime data in another way. And that is, if you compare the FBI's measure of reported crimes to the National Crime Victimization Survey data on reported crimes, even those go in opposite directions. You've seen an increase in reported crimes according to the National Crime Victimization data. So what's happening is that when the National Crime Victimization does their survey, you know, they'll ask you about 40 questions or so. They'll ask you, you know, what crime was committed, where it was committed, characteristics of the criminal, how you responded, what the final outcome was. And then they'll also ask you whether you reported crimes to police. So people are telling the Bureau of Justice Statistics that puts this data together that, yeah, we're reporting to police, but the number of reported crimes by police are showing that that's not happening. And so I think there are a couple of things that are going on. One is, in many parts of the country, if you call up 911, they'll ask you if it's an emergency. And what they mean is the criminal literally there committing the crime? And if they're not, then they're not going to send out a police car to you because there is a shortage of police officers. And they'll say, you can come down now to go and report the crime. Well, I don't think most people understand that simply calling 911 doesn't result in the crime being officially reported. You have to have a police report put out. And the thing is, in the past, it used to be a lot easier to go and report a crime because the police would come out, they'd do their investigation, and they'd write up a report. Well, now you're making it so that people have to come into the police station. And so some people who would have reported it before now aren't going to take the additional time to go down to the police station. And that's particularly true when they are told sometimes that, and they know that nothing's going to happen to the criminals. I mean, not only is it more difficult for them to report it, but you know, the likelihood that something's going to come of it is much lower. And there are other problems that are there, too. But I think, you know, also you have a number of district attorneys around the country which refuse to prosecute people for violent crimes. So you have take the difference between aggravated and simple assault. Mm-hmm. Aggravated assault is a felony and it involves the use of a weapon. Simple assault is a misdemeanor. And so what happens in many of these urban areas where you have Soros district attorneys is they're literally refusing to prosecute people for weapons offenses. You know, these are the same people who want to go and have strict gun control. But if a criminal uses a gun in an assault on somebody, they refuse to count the weapon in the assault. And so they lower it from aggravated assault to simple assault. And the reason why that's important is that the FBI crime data doesn't measure simple assault. They're just counting aggravated assaults. And so somebody goes and reports a crime to the police, or they get called up by the National Crime Victimization Data and they say, yeah, this person attacked me with a gun. And I reported that to the police. That doesn't show up in the reported crime data from the FBI, because even though the crime was reported and in a police report, since it was downgraded to simple assault, it doesn't get into the crime data for the FBI. So those are, I could go on, but those are just a few of the things there. And I think, you know, the big thing that you see is that the media, time after time now, is going out there and saying, violent crime is falling, crime is falling. But people don't seem to understand that, basically implying that somehow your average citizen out there is just delusional. Maybe they're letting the news media go and, you know, color their views on it. Whereas I think what's happening is that the average citizens have a pretty good idea what's happening to crime. It's the media, people who just don't understand the crime data, who are out there going and saying that crime is falling.
All right. Well, a couple of things. So first, I mean, you're well aware that generally speaking, you know, Gallup does this survey every year. Is crime going up or down? Generally speaking, people believe that crime is going up even when it is going down. So I don't know that we can actually just say, well, you know, the American people have it right, because we don't always have it right when it comes to crime. I'm also curious to get your take on the murder rate, because that seems to me to be a pretty reportable crime, right? And a fairly, you know, you can play some games with, you know, clearance rates. You can maybe classify a homicide as manslaughter, something like that. But there does seem to be pretty significant evidence that homicides are decreasing in most American cities. Do you think that that data is accurate?
Well, I think generally murder is much more accurate. And it has gone down in 2022 and 2023. But what the media does is it compares it to 2020. They don't compare it to 2019. And, you know, these are substantial drops. But you had a huge increase between 2019 and 2020.
Yep.
And that even with the drop in 2023, about a 13% drop, it's still 7% higher than it was in 2019. And so, yeah, murder's gone down. And I think what's happened is that police departments, as they've cut back enforcement, the one area that they've concentrated on has been the most serious crimes, and that's been murder. They haven't cut back on that in the same way that they've cut back for other types of crimes there. So when they go and tell you have to come down to a police station to go and report, that's not going to be true for a murder. They'll send out somebody to go and a police officers with regard to murders. And so it's just what limited resources the police departments have, you know, have gone into murders. And so those are still high, even though they've gone down recently. But it's not as bad as it is for property crimes or for other types of violent crimes.
How much of this, because I've always, excuse me, John, I've always said that, you know, crime is generally speaking a local phenomenon. You know, in any given city, you're talking about maybe 1% of the population that's responsible for half or more violent crimes in terms of geographic area. Maybe, you know, 3 to 5% of a particular city is sort of the hot spot where crime is concentrated. And I look at things like, I think it was the mayor of Miami who said in January of this year, homicides, the lowest number, so not even per capita, just the lowest number of homicides in Miami since 1947. Look at cities like Oklahoma City that actually did not really see a huge spike in homicides in 2020, but have continued to see homicides drop. I'm curious just to get your take on how much we can tell and how much we can learn from, you know, national data, 50,000 foot level data, as opposed to looking at what's going on in individual cities like Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, where Larry Krasner, as you say, is one of those Soros DAs, or, you know, Los Angeles, where George Gascon has also taken a very soft on crime policy.
Well, I mean, law enforcement is a local issue. The number of police you hire, the policing policies that you hire are determined locally. The district attorneys are virtually always elected locally. Judges are virtually always elected locally. You know, so whether you go and arrest people and whether you charge them and what their sentences are and whether you release them without bail, all those are essentially local decisions that are being made. So it's overwhelming locally. And what you see nationwide is kind of what you were saying in terms of the concentration of crimes. People tend to commit crimes in the areas where they live. And that's the reason why, you know, Blacks are overwhelmingly murdered by other Blacks. And what, you know, 90% of Blacks are murdered by Blacks, and about, you know, a high percentage of whites, 80-some percent of whites are murdered by whites. And so, but what you find is that 56% of the murders in the United States occur in 2% of the counties. And if you look at a murder map for that 2% of the counties, you'll have almost two-thirds of their murders take place within 10 block areas within those counties. So murder is extremely heavily concentrated in very tiny areas within the United States. So, I mean, the points that you're raising are, I think, are correct. You know, there are certain areas where they defunded the police, that it's making it because of different types of policy changes. They've lost a lot of police officers there due to retirement. Now, in many of these areas, you've started to hire police back in the last year or so. But, you know, you have somebody who has 10, 15, 20 years of experience. You just can't replace them immediately with somebody who has 6 months or a year worth of experience. It's going to take a while before those police officers are going to be as effective as the ones that they've lost in those areas. And so, you know, it's not too surprising. And, you know, in the you've made it also in many of these urban areas have additional reporting requirements for police. You know, take California. Mm-hmm. Anytime somebody gets pulled over for a traffic stop in California now, police officers have to fill out, you know, legal pages worth of forms on who they talk to them, why they talk to them about, you know, whether they cited them. In California, they have to go and fill out things like whether they think they're gay there. They can't ask the person if they're gay. And somehow, you know, when you pulled somebody over, you know, you could tell from the way they were driving the car whether they were homosexual or not. You know, it's just crazy stuff. And it takes time for police officers. So what you see is that they're pulling over fewer people for traffic stops, because they just don't want to go and have to fill out the forms. And the thing is, if you're not pulling people over for speeding or for reckless driving or for running a stop sign or whatever, you're going to have more traffic accidents and you're going to have more deaths that are going to be occurring because people are going to drive more carelessly if they're not worried about getting stopped. So there are real consequences for those types of things that are going on. But
yeah, you know, that's... Well, I was going to say, we saw that in 2020 and 2021 as well, right, where traffic fatalities, which had been declining, also spiked. Fewer police on the roads, fewer stops being made, as you say. But, you know, the other thing that I'm curious about, John, is, you know, we talk about the uniform crime reporting and the crime victimization survey, which comes out yearly. Right. Those are yearly reports. I know that there might be some estimates that come out, you know, maybe every 6 months or so.
Well, the FBI crime data now comes out quarterly.
OK.
It used to be yearly, but it comes out quarterly now. This is this new NIDAS system that they
have. Okay. So I guess my question is, what are the challenges, you know, because we can look to 2019, we can look to 2020, but what are the challenges when it comes to looking at crime right now in 2024? You know, I know Jeff Asher, the crime analyst, has a year-to-date murder dashboard that provides links to various law enforcement agencies, and they keep a running tally of homicides. Some departments do sort of a running tally of violent crime, but how difficult is it to actually pinpoint where crime is today as opposed to where it was 12 months ago or even 5 years ago?
It's not that difficult. I mean, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of cities make their data readily available on their websites. You have CompStat data for cities like New York and Los Angeles and Houston and other places, which report it by week. And they will tell you, you know, how it compares so far this year compared to the same period last year, how, you know, the last week this year compares to the same week last year.
But if there are all those flaws, though, that you talked about in terms of reporting, aren't those flaws going to be baked into the data that comes out on a weekly or a monthly basis?
I mean, those are reported crimes. And so anytime you have reported crimes, look, again, generally over time, it used to be that the reported crimes and total crimes tended to go up and down together.
Mm-hmm.
That has been the case the last few years. And, you know, and so, yeah, you're going to have issues and there are going to be certain cities where it's going to be worse. I think you have, you know, if you have very low arrest rates, people just, you know, the return for them going reporting crimes is lower. People report crimes if they think the people are going to be caught and punished. If they don't think people are going to be caught and punished, then, you know, it's just not as worth their time to go and report these things. And so places where you've had bigger changes in arrest rates, you're going to have more kind of errors in terms of looking at the reported crimes as a measure of what's happening to total crimes. But I think in many places you've seen that problem.
Yeah. So I guess the bottom line question is what data do you look at that you have confidence in? Because again, if the reported crimes are not matching up with you know, the victimization surveys, right, which were victims say, no, I had a crime committed against me. Yeah, I may have reported it to police, but it's not showing up. I mean, how much confidence do you have in any of the numbers that are coming out at this point?
Well, I think the National Crime Victimization Survey is probably the best measure of it. And I think they do a fairly good job. Now, I would go and make changes. I tried to get some changes made during the Trump administration, but I think it's still about the best measure that we have for overall crimes. You know, it's there, as I say, there's some issues that I have with it, but in terms of measuring total crimes reported and unreported, you know, that's the only ball game that we have.
And what's the most recent data for the crime victimization survey, 2023?
It comes out in September. So in this September, it'll come out for 2023. So we don't have the data for 2023 yet. We have the latest data for them is 2022.
Okay. I mean, isn't that, it seems like it's difficult then to extrapolate from 2022 data what's going on in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you have to wait a while to go and get that. I mean, I suppose they could put out the data faster, but we're talking about the government
But I mean, if the contention is that crime is going up, but we're relying on data from 2022 to make that case, I mean, John, you see the conundrum there, right? Is there more recent data that indicates that crime is going up as opposed to going down?
Look, the point is, we had huge increases in the data, the crime data in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, you know, who knows, but I doubt, even if you believe, even if you want to take the FBI data for 2023 that showed a 2% drop in violent crime this year, let's say the FBI data was accurate for last year. And, you know, if you believe that the national crime victimization data for the previous years was right, it's not going to make much of a dent in it. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, a 2% drop after a 42% increase isn't going to get you very far.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they'll be positively correlated, related to each other this year, you know, or last year. But even if that's the case, you're still going to have a much higher crime rate. I mean, look, people see crime in the sense that you go to the stores, as I mentioned earlier, and you see things behind glass. And that's something that you're seeing more and more occurring. This isn't something that these stores want to go and do. They don't want to go and make it more difficult for people to go and shop in the place.
Right.
They don't want to bear the cost for putting up the glass. They don't want to have to bear the cost for having employees going in there and unlocking and standing next to you while you try to read the packages that are there. And people know that wasn't the case a few years ago when they see that more and more stores have that. I was just listening to a news report earlier for Washington, D.C., where they were talking about they're banning people taking luggage into stores because people were just filling up the luggage with items and then walking out of the store. And so, you know, who heard of something like that a few years ago?
Right. No, I absolutely agree with you. And you know, we've been talking a lot about violent crime. Property crime, I think, is a different animal. And I think there are more statistics showing that property crime has either continued to increase or certainly has not has fallen as fast as the murder rate has. Right. So those quality of life issues, I think that you're right about that, that people do see these changes, particularly. Now, look, I'll say in rural Virginia, I haven't really noticed any changes, but we're a pretty low crime area to begin with. But if you live in a major metropolitan area, certainly you have seen those changes over the last few years. I just the other aspect of this, of course, is that this is political, right? This has become a political issue. Democrats want to be able to point to lower crime rates and say, look, Joe Biden's making a difference, right? And they also want to point to the pandemic crime spike and blame it on Donald Trump, which I think is absolutely absurd. How much credit do you think, because again, we just talked about crime being local. I don't think it makes any sense whatsoever to give a president, regardless of who it is, credit or blame for the national crime rate. So can you talk about that perspective? I think Glenn Thrush had a piece of the Washington Post last week trying again to make the case that, you know, crime has fallen and it's all because of Joe Biden, which I just think is an absolutely absurd take.
Right. Well, look, I think Biden does deserve some blame. And the reason why I think he deserves some blame is that he refuses to go and call out these prosecutors, these district attorneys in these heavily Democratic areas for not prosecuting violent criminals. He refuses to go and call out, left-wing liberal judges who, during COVID and, you know, even up through 2022, were releasing large numbers of inmates from local jails. The people you're talking about in local jails were like 18 to early 30s. We knew in 2020 that they weren't the people at risk from COVID. These aren't people who are over 65. These weren't people that had a lot of comorbidities that were there. And yet in many urban areas, you'd have half and even two thirds of the inmates being released well into 2022. I mean, the only thing Biden talks about with regard to crime is gun crime. And the thing is, you know, and recently, you know, he changed to talk about more police, but police are only part of the issue there. He hasn't, you know, dealt with all the paperwork changes and other restrictions there. Police that, you know, you're in a city like Chicago, and they've had this for a while. Every time a Chicago police officer talks to somebody, they have to fill out 2 legal pages of forms. It takes about an hour on average to go and do that. So you go and talk to 4 people in the morning. Your afternoon is filled up with paperwork. You've effectively reduced dramatically the number of police officers that you have there. But it also makes it, just like in the California example I gave you, you make it so that police are reticent to go and talk to people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they don't want to have to fill out the forms. And so they basically sit in their police cars and don't have the kind of the communications with local people that they used to have. And so that makes them less effective as police officers. But, you know, Biden wants to talk about gun crime all the time. 92% of violent crime has nothing to do with guns. And yet that's his focus. You know, the way you reduce gun crime is the same way you reduce violent crime generally, is you have to make it risky for criminals to go and commit crimes, higher arrest rates, higher conviction rates, longer prison sentences. You know, but as we talked about earlier, you have these district attorneys who won't prosecute people for aggravated assault because they don't want to prosecute them for gun crimes that are there. Well, and so it ends up getting, you know, set down to misdemeanor, simple assault that's there. You know, Biden could complain about that. He could make it more difficult, and he could have kind of a sister soldier moment to some extent by criticizing these Democrats there and the policies that they have. You know, you'll search in vain for, you know, any types of discussions that he's had when he's talked about crime for criticizing these other Democrats that are there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, listen, John, unfortunately, we're going to run out of time here in a couple of minutes. So my last question to you is, you are obviously, of course, the author of More Guns, Less Crime. 2020, we saw, I call it the great gun run of 2020, which lasted into 2021. You could argue that it's still going on today. We've had 60 some odd months of 1 million plus gun sales, according to the National Shooting Sports Foundation. So clearly we've seen a lot of guns added to the rosters over the last couple of years. How do you square the circle of more guns, less crime, when we've had more guns and now you're arguing we've had more crime? Are you concerned that the gun control lobby might twist what it is that you're saying here and say, aha, see, John Lott even says more guns leads to more crime?
All right. Well, anybody who's read my research knows that I think that the most important single factor for reducing crime are police. You know, I think you can explain over half the variation in crime rates over time by police and, you know, prosecutions for people and prison sentence lengths and the death penalty, basically law enforcement broadly defined. You know, I think that private ownership of guns is important? Yeah, but I think it's a relatively small impact there in terms of what happens to total crime. You know, the irony is that the same people who want to make it difficult for police to go and do their jobs also want to make it difficult for private citizens to be able to go and defend themselves. I mean, there's a number of cases you could point to just in New York City where anybody who's tried to defend themselves is going, you know, you have Jose Alba, who tried to defend himself with a knife when he was attacked in his bodega. You have Matthew Perry, who tried to restrain a guy on a subway. You have, just in the last week, you had Francisco Valero, who a concealed carry permit holder, a store owner there, who used a gun. And, you know, he's facing up to 7 years in prison for shooting somebody who was assaulting an employee there. You know, the criminal who had done the assault and had been trying to steal from the store there only gets charged with petty theft. He doesn't even get charged with the assault that's there. And, you know, he faces a maximum of 364 days in prison, whereas the individual who used a gun defensively there is facing up to 7 years in prison. So, you know, look, I think private ownership of guns is important. I think that's the reason why police officers have been so supportive of private ownership of guns. I mean, you go and look at surveys from Police One, which is the largest organization of police in the United States with about 450,000 members. You have about 76% of officers think that private ownership of guns is either extremely or very important in terms of reducing crime. Police see how important having guns themselves are dealing with criminals, and they know that even though they are extremely important in reducing crime, police themselves know that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's occurred. And the question is, what should people do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves? And they know that having a gun is the most effective way for people to do it. And that's particularly true for people who are relatively weaker physically, women and the elderly. And my research shows that the people who benefit the most from having guns are the ones who are the most likely victims of violent crime. And that overwhelmingly tends to be poor Blacks who live in high crime urban areas. No. So we've seen the NSS data that you're talking about, that's really just from the government there. The FBI records this data, and they're just taking the data that's from there. But, you know, I look at concealed carry permits because I think it's kind of a more hard number than we have on gun ownership rates in the United States. And we have about 22 million concealed carry permit holders in the United States right now. But even that's an underestimate because we have 29 constitutional carry states now this year.
I was going to say that's great for us as Second Amendment advocates, but it's got to play hell for data gurus like yourself, because now all of a sudden, I mean, we do know that there is when a state becomes constitutional carry, the number of individuals who will seek out that permit tends to go down because, you know, some folks say, well, I don't need it. I don't really travel over the border. I don't need reciprocity, things of that nature. But I think
if they travel over the border, they're likely to travel into another constitutional carry state.
Right.
But the thing is, when you're looking at this, we have a survey that we did. There was a Pew survey that was done in 2017 that showed that about 5% of likely voters either carried all or most of the time. We did a survey last year with McLaughlin and Associates, and we found that 15.6% of likely voters carried all or most of the time. And so that's a threefold increase over that period of time. And I think that's partly in response to the higher crime. And one of the reasons why I think the number of states have moved to constitutional carry is that during COVID, you had 20 states that basically shut down issuing concealed carry permits. Mm-hmm. And so here you had this big demand for permits as violent crime increased. And people were not able to go and get the permits. That included a lot of states like Florida, for example, where Nikki Freed was a Democrat, was in charge of issuing the permits. And she just refused to issue permits for a long period of time.
Yep.
You know, Georgia, other places were stopping issuing permits. And so I think that's one of the several reasons that you've seen this big increase in the number of constitutional carry states over the last few years.
I think you're probably right. Listen, John, I hate to cut it short. I could talk with you for hours, but unfortunately our time here is nearing an end. excuse me. Again, I really do appreciate you coming on the program. I appreciate the data. I confess, I don't know. My position is I don't know whether crime is going up or down in this country. It's difficult because you can make the data. There are so many determinative factors, as you say. There's stuff that the data just doesn't cover, right? The DA in any given jurisdiction, the rigmarole that officers have to go through that might lead to a reduction in reported crimes. You know, I think if anything, what I think you and I can probably agree on is that this is an issue that is far more complicated than the media tends to report. They make it seem like, you know, the stats are what they are, that there is nothing, you know, behind the scenes that you need to consider. And, you know, talking with you, I think it's very clear that there's a lot of stuff that the data just simply won't pick up because it's not designed to do that. So, again,
well, my own guess is it's pretty clear that it's going up. And there are multiple reasons for that. It's not just, I mean, the data through 2022 shows it was going up. But, you know, you have these other surveys from Gallup and what have you that I think generally are consistent with the national crime victimization data. And my own guess is that there's, you know, those have shown pretty high rates that people are concerned about crime even in 2023 and the beginning of 2024 compared to what they were beforehand. So, but in any case, I mean, you believe what you want to believe. I'm just telling you, my own guess is, even if there's been a slight drop over the last year or so by looking at the FBI data, it's still high relative to what it was in 2019. You look at something like the discussion about murders.
John, we've got less than a minute here. I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but we're gonna end this in just about 30 seconds here. So I don't want to be rude and cut you off in the middle of a sentence. Can we have you back and keep talking about this at some point?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Okay,
I mean, you know, I'm always happy to do your show.
Let's do that. Let's continue this in part two. Maybe next week I'll get with you offline and we can figure out a time to come back. But thank you again for your time, Crime Prevention Research Center. Check out Dr. John Lott's work at crimeresearch.org.
Right. Thank you.
There you go. Dr. John Lott, thanks again for coming on the show today. My thanks again to Dr. Lott for joining me on the program. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation. And I do want to welcome John back for more. We could have talked for another 40 minutes about this. Bottom line, though, for me, is that, again, crime is a local phenomenon. Giving Joe Biden credit or a lot of blame, I don't think makes a lot of sense any more than giving Donald Trump credit or blame for the crime rate when he was in office. Again, we're talking about, you know, a very small number of Americans who are committing these violent crimes. And when I say crime, I'm talking about violent crime now. I'm not talking about property crime, which is, I think, a slightly different animal. In a very small, you know, percentage of a city's given space, that's where these crimes are largely committed and are largely driven. So to me, crime is a local phenomena. And, you know, taking a 50,000 foot view, I don't know that it always tells us a lot. But I also think that it's worth pointing out, we didn't get into this with John, but, you know, a couple of the cities that I mentioned, Oklahoma City and Miami, where murders have fallen substantially, those are constitutional carry cities, right? They're in constitutional carry states. So the idea that more guns equals more crime, which, of course, is what the gun control groups would like to argue. Now, of course, they have to argue that we've had more guns, we have less crime, and it's somehow all Joe Biden's, cause for celebration. We find ourselves in an interesting position right now. And again, I understand why people feel like crime is going up around the country. But these Gallup surveys typically show that a majority of Americans believe that crime is going up, whether regardless of what the crime stats actually show. In a media environment where it bleeds, it leads, right? We often get the impression that crime is going up even when crime is falling. So I don't know that public opinion polls tell us a lot. The National Crime Victimization Survey that John brought up really is interesting, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the results will be in September when the data for 2023 is released. But again, if you're looking for, you know, that up-to-date snapshot, what is crime like right now? As John said, you're going to be relying on those reported crimes. And if fewer crimes are being reported to police, that is going to give you a skewed picture of what crime looks like in any given community. So, again, that's why I say I don't know. I feel pretty confident that homicide is declining. But that doesn't necessarily mean that every category of violent crime is falling as well. And again, when you look at property crime, in many cities, it appears either to be plateaued at a really elevated level or continuing to increase. And a lot of what John said makes sense, you know, talking about not only the staffing problems that a lot of cities still have, but the rules that are in place that lead to more paperwork than actual policing. You know, that does, I think, have a big impact. So anyway, I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation with Dr. Lott in the future, and I hope that you enjoyed today's discussion. Before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS, I-D-E-A-S, IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of the Windy City of Chicago. The headline from CWB Chicago, back in the streets, judge releases man accused of attacking woman who wouldn't give him money. All right. So this is kind of a recidivist report because the individual in question does have, as CWB Chicago reports, a history of attacking women on the city's transit system. But despite that history, CWB Chicago's Tim Heckey writes that prosecutors did not even ask a judge to keep him in custody, and the judge put him back on the streets without the inconvenience of an ankle monitor. Back in November of 2017, so we're talking almost 7 years ago, prosecutors charged Robert Cook with attacking a 15-year-old girl and a 23-year-old woman on the red line in the Loop, the gun-free red line, by the way, where you're not allowed to carry a firearm to protect yourself. The surveillance video showed that he used his body to confine the victims to their train seats. He pressed against him, wrapping his legs around theirs and then grinding his crotch on their legs and buttocks while breathing heavily and moaning. This is so gross. Cook allegedly asked the victims if they liked it. Cook knew, according to prosecutors, that the younger victim was a student at the Whitney Young Magnet School who was under the age of 17. Records, according to Heckey, show that Cook escaped from electronic monitoring while the case was pending. But prosecutors then dropped the escape charge in May of 2021 when Cook pleaded guilty to two counts of kidnapping by secretly confining. That charge was a Class 2 felony. It was reduced from a Class X kidnapping causing bodily harm. The judge in the case sentenced Cook to 6 years in each count to be served concurrently at the same time, but the prison time was reduced by 50% under Illinois law, and it was further offset by the time that Cook had already spent in jail and on an ankle monitor. So even though he was out on an ankle monitor, that counts as time served. That's crazy to me. So the 6-year sentence became a 3-year sentence, became even less than a 3-year sentence. Because of all of the, time served that Cook had already spent on an ankle monitor or in jail. Heckey says that now prosecutors are again accusing Cook of targeting a victim on the red line. Chicago police issued a public bulletin about the crime last Friday as they tried to identify the assailant. 2 days later, Chicago police arrested the 46-year-old Cook on the red line platform. According to his arrest report, Cook asked a Streeterville woman for money at the State Lake platform back on May 22nd. When she ignored his request and then walked away, he kicked her and then returned moments later and punched her in the face, causing her to suffer a bloody lip and a bruised face. During a court hearing on Sunday, according to Heckey, prosecutors did not ask Judge David Kelly to keep Cook in custody, despite, again, his previous history. And Kelly set Cook free without even requiring him to wear an ankle monitor, which I guess maybe the judge was like, well, waste of time. We know he's just going to escape anyway, right? So again, when we talk about all of the things that go into accounting for violent crime, this case, details some of what John was talking about. You've got somebody who is charged with a major felony who is allowed to plead guilty to a lesser felony. You've got an individual who, again, is got a history of violence on the transit system and a criminal justice system that doesn't really seem to give a damn about that, prosecutor, judge alike. I'm sure the public defender's happy that their client was able to get such a great deal while he's awaiting trial on these charges. But again, this is just one case. Multiply that by, you know, 1,000 or more cases a day around the country, and you can see the challenges of trying to figure out what our crime rate looks like when all of these games are being played. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, a very succinct headline. Homeowner shoots intruder, which I mean, that does tell the story, at least some of the story. This is from the Taylor Press in Taylor, Texas, where a man was shot by a resident on Monday night as he entered a home uninvited. The Taylor Press reports that, according to authorities, officers responded to a call Monday evening about 11:35 for a man armed with a knife attempted to enter a home on Donna Drive in Taylor, Texas. As officers were en route, they were informed that the man was then in the house and had been shot by the homeowner. When police arrived, the suspect had managed to exit the home, was laying on the front porch with a gunshot wound to his hip. Officers identified the suspect as 23-year-old Austin Sumner of Thrall, Texas. Police found a large knife with a sheath that was inscribed with "Hail Satan" that the suspect was carrying. I know. As if our recidivist report wasn't weird enough, now we got this armed citizen story. The wounded man taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. Police did obtain a warrant charging Sumner with burglary of a habitation with commission of a felony. The warrant will be served once the suspect is released from medical care. The knife with the sheath that says "Hail Satan" entered into evidence, and I guess we'll see that at trial. The homeowner, who acted in self-defense, not expected to face any charges. Don't know the circumstances of this incident. Don't know if Sumner knew the homeowner. Don't know if he claims that Satan compelled him to try to enter this home, but hopefully we'll get more details in the days to come. Thankfully, however, the most important detail we already know, and that is that the homeowner is safe and sound, because he was able to protect himself with a firearm. Finally today, our good deed of the day: in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in New York State who were able to save a couple of lives on the Niagara River. This was last Friday, and a very scary situation in the town of Tonawanda. There were two people that were riding a jet ski that overturned the Niagara River. Excuse me. Call went out around 6:30 Friday night. Coast Guard was called out, Erie County Sheriff's Office, Marine Unit, the Air One helicopter. But before any of the authorities could arrive on the scene, just about 4 minutes after the 911 call was made, a 53-year-old man able to get both people out of the water and onto his boat. The Erie County Sheriff's Office said in a statement, the incident highlights the importance of boaters being alert at all times and ensuring that everyone on a personal watercraft is wearing a flotation device. Doesn't sound like that was happening there for the riders of the jet ski. The Coast Guard ended up taking custody of the two individuals and transporting them to a hospital to get taken care of and checked out. Don't know anything at all about the 53-year-old Good Samaritan. He has remained anonymous as of this point, but hopefully he will get some public accolades in the day ahead. But in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a couple of strangers in need. Whoever that Good Samaritan in North Tonawanda, New York was, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company, and I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. I'm not sure what tomorrow's topic is going to be. The dust may have settled a little bit in Texas 23. We may end up doing a after-action report on the absolutely bruising primary fight between Tony Gonzalez, Brandon Herrera. Brandon Herrera, at last report, down about less than 500 votes. Out of about 30,000 casts. So there is a potential for a recount. Don't know that Brandon Herrera is going to take that option. We will wait and see. But I wrote about this at Bearing Arms. I kind of want to say more about this, so we might talk about this with a fellow Texan. Well, not a fellow Texan. I'm not a Texan. With a Texan on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. If we don't discuss Texas 23 Well, that's probably because something else has popped up when it comes to our right to keep and bear arms that we're going to have to deal with as well. You know, we try to do that each and every day, not only here at Cam & Company, but at BearingArms.com. I would encourage you to visit the website. Check it out if you like what you see. I'd also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get 50% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content and ad-free experience. You'll get the ability to comment on stories, but perhaps most importantly, you will be helping us continue to do the independent pro-segment of journalism that we do at Bearing Arms. And in this day and age of media manipulation, big tech censorship, the mission is more important than ever. So thank you again for your support. Look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, enjoy your hump day Wednesday. What's that phrase? Oh, yeah. Be safe. Be well. I think I got those two. Be well, be safe. There we go. And be free.